Your world, your challenges, your faith. When faith within engages the world without, there's power. It's living life from the inside out.
The church is changing during the pandemic, and we're not surprised, but what are the changes? And is the pandemic the only reason for them? I'm Martha Manikas Foster, and today on our Inside Out podcast, I'm talking with Dr. David Kenneman. He's president of the Barna Group, the research and resource company that recently issued its State of the Church 2020 report. Welcome, Dr. Kenneman, to Inside Out.
It's so great to be here. Thanks.
David, I know that the Barna Group has been surveying, studying, writing articles, recording videos about the church in 2020, and I'm going to be asking you to just kind of condense your findings into these few minutes. So I know that's a lot to ask. But before you describe what you see as the church today, I'm curious to know this, David. What about the pandemic propelled the changes that you've seen? Have the disruptions and the isolation sped up the changes that were already occurring? Or did the church in the U.S. change directions dramatically because of the pandemic, do you think?
Well, I think it's a bit of both. I think there's certainly a degree to which it's changed directions. I mean, we've had more digital church in the last 6 months than probably all of human history combined. First digital Easter, so many different ways in which church organizations and, I mean, retail, restaurants, businesses have had to go through a lot of changes as well. So I think there's a degree to which it's, you know, it's very, very unique. Obviously, there have been other pandemics in human history before, but in terms of our modern technological era, there's never been anything quite like it. And so I think that impact on churches and others has been pretty profound. At the same time, I think it also has accelerated some of the things that were already in place. Mm-hmm. So people's connection to local churches were becoming less and less deep. They come fewer and fewer weekends per year. Mm-hmm. You know, millennials and Gen Z, the younger generations, are kind of renegotiating their relationship to church organizations and to churches. And so I think there's a lot of things that really accelerated about changes that were already taking place. How do you trust others? How do you think about the political environment? How do you think about, you know, sort of connecting in with peers through social media? I mean, all those things have been in place prior to the pandemic, mm-hmm. and I think that just accelerated those kinds of trends.
Mm-hmm. So what would you say are the headlines for how the church has changed since the isolation and social distancing began in March? I know you're giving us a look at the whole year, but actually that's the same thing as a pandemic, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's right. And so, I mean, some of the things that we've seen, I mean, first, there's been the digital church trends that we've been talking about, and so many people have experienced that. It allowed for a lot of people to kind of sort of visit and sort of shop around a bit. Mm-hmm. I don't use that as a negative term, because I actually think it's good that people get a chance to see the whole church and the breadth of the church and churches. And so there's certainly been a lot of kind of moving around, sampling other churches. A big chunk of people, about 3 in 10 practicing Christians, have just sort of sat it out. They are sort of like, hey, we love you guys. We love the church. We're just going to wait till we're back. And they don't do a lot of digital church. So that's been an interesting trend. Mm-hmm. And then I think there's a lot of things related to the health and well-being of pastors. You know, they're really struggling to sort of stay hopeful and you know, not ultimately hopeful in their faith, but they have a bit of real crisis of calling that they're describing to us, questions of emotional health and others. And I think that's another big trend that we see across the whole population, of an increase of anxiety, of loneliness, of mental health challenges, of people, you know, especially moms and dads of young kids who are having to educate their own children from home, you know, this fall. You know, so many different ways that this is, you know, a real and lasting sort of transformation of the way people are operating.
Mm-hmm. So did you find in your studies that there are certain characteristics of churches that seem to make them more agile, more able to connect with the congregants in all of these changes, maybe, you know, in new ways because of this digital opportunity, that the disruptions have actually been less disruptive for a certain kind of church or churches with certain characteristics?
Well, I think across the board, every church was disrupted in a pretty major way, because no one saw this coming quite like it has. Mm-hmm. So I think everyone was disrupted pretty significantly. But certainly those churches that already had cameras and streaming technology and a will and appetite to do that were less, you know, had to, you know, sort of switch the lights on in terms of their video work. They were probably less affected overall. And that would be, you know, they tend to be larger, a little more innovative churches. And I certainly think that the changes are pretty deep for other churches that weren't quite ready for that. But, you know, and I think churches that have been less prepared, you know, some of the smaller churches, some that were a little less resourced, some that were kind of resisting digital technologies. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been writing and thinking a lot about what I call digital Babylon, the idea that screens disciple both for good and for bad. Mm-hmm. And I sort of feel like this has accelerated the church into that whole space. So the winners were those that were already contemplating, you know, what does it look like to try to minister in this current, you know, sort of digital context and social media and the power of podcasting and YouTube and other things. And those that were really caught off guard were those that were sort of hoping just to outlive and outlast the digital mm-hmm. transformation of society.
Mm-hmm. So you have some of these churches that were either on the cusp of going more digital or who were already quite conversant in that technology. What do the changes in the church attendance, how does that make an impact for Christian maturity? I mean, a church might be able to do something digitally, but is that feeding enough? Is it really increasing the congregant's maturity? And what about people who like might have just started attending church because they have spiritual questions and now they're... Are they just lost to us? Are they connecting in too? Do you have a way of knowing?
Yeah, those are great questions. I mean, I think first, one principle we learn in social research is that every story is quite unique and different.
Sure.
So there's no real like broad-based way of saying here's how all of these trends have impacted on, so let's say, new visitors, new attenders. I think on some level we've actually seen that there's a real increase in online participation across a wide spectrum of people, non-Christians, skeptics, others. I mean, mm-hmm. one program that's done really well is a thing called Alpha
yes.
Online.
Yes.
And, you know, they've had a lot of sort of online conversations, sort of Zoom rooms that are designed to give people a chance to really talk about the person of Jesus and their faith and their doubts. And so I think in some ways we underestimate the degree to which the digital world, the digital Babylon world that we're talking about, is actually a real, it's just a natural extension of all of human life. And you've got, you know, encouragement and beautiful things, and you've got really ugly and hard things on screens. And so I think there's a way in which this is forcing the church to really grapple with the fact that to disciple people at all, we can't just disciple them when they're there on the campus or in our buildings. We have to disciple them in all of their lives. Mm-hmm. And you know, that we've found, we did a project called Faith for Exiles, a book where we interviewed the most resilient 10% of young Christians, 18 to 29, mm-hmm. kind of what made them stay in their faith, why was their faith lasting in the face of the challenges that so many of their other peers who walk away from faith are facing. And, you know, we found these different practices of identity in Jesus, of cultural discernment, meaningful relationships, being vocationally discipled and having a countercultural mission. So this project called Faith for Exiles really looked at that. And so the answer to the question of, you know, can people's faith be growing and will this, you know, cause the church to have deeper metrics, deeper ways of thinking about discipleship? My answer is I hope so, because I think this gives the church a chance to sort of rethink its sort of approach. I mean, being in person is wonderful and it's an important part that, you know, will never be sort of dissociated from the Christian life mm-hmm. other than in a pandemic. And yet, you know, it's like we also have to have a wide range of ways of influencing people, even in the digital space and especially in the digital space.
Mm-hmm. So supposing that we all get back to the opportunity to be together, you're saying this is a growth area that was necessary? Is that what I'm hearing?
That's right. Yeah, I mean, I think we try to do dial-up ministry, if you can remember back to the early days of the internet.
Yes.
We try to do dial-up ministry in a Wi-Fi world. And so young people are finding all sorts of information. I mean, it's just astounding how many hours of content that young people are taking in through YouTube, social media, other sort of forms of media, music and video games and television shows and movies, but especially YouTube and sort of the, you know, we've seen in our research a lot of young people who are sort of captivated by the compelling nature of, you know, YouTube channels on religion, and yet there's not always great, like, sort of biblical content or people that have the kind of, you know, love of scripture that would, you know, captivate young people. So I think it's a change that's very necessary because, you know, Google has become, this is a lot of the digital Babylon argument, Google has become something like the sex educator and the best friend and confidant, and, you know, it's sort of your theological coach because you can Google anything. And so recognizing that, you know, we're going to have to be able to effectively, you know, talk about the Christian worldview, why it matters, why it's trustworthy, that's just not going to be accomplished merely through, you know, a really good youth program on, you know, Wednesday nights. It's got to be something that's a more inclusive, you know, sort of moving from dial-up to Wi-Fi ministry.
Mm-hmm. So actually meeting people where they're at, and this has kind of accelerated that for the church, or it should be accelerating that for the church.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah. So I guess, like, leading off from that, it sounds like you are encouraged by something. So from your finding, what encourages you about the future of the Christian church in America? And then what are some of the flashing lights and warning signs? Because if Google has become our theological mentor, I mean, people are paying more attention to QAnon, for instance. I mean, we're not the only ones out there, right, when people have spiritual questions. So, I mean, that would be one of the things I'd be looking for, but I'm not you. So what are the things that are the warning signs, too?
Well, I think first, I am very hopeful. My kind of life mission is to help the church navigate change and help, you know, sort of courageously lead the church into the future, especially the next generation. And so, you know, when I think about that, I actually get kind of excited when things are up in the air.
Shaken up?
when sort of the status quo, and, you know, there's sort of people who will often wag their finger at me and say, well, you know, Ecclesiastes says there's nothing new under the sun. And it's like, well, that's really true as a sort of a proverb, but it's also true that, you know, God's up to new things, and Isaiah 43:19 says, "Behold, I'm doing a new thing." And, you know, do you perceive it? So I'm a more of a new things kind of guy than I am, you know, let's sort of try to preserve our way of life and our way of thinking, because new paradigms are always changing. And so I think the things that are flashing lights are, you know, the degree to which we try to go back to something like a normal after the pandemic, where we try to just sort of restart our churches in the same way they've always been doing them. Lots of great stuff that happens. It's not a critique. Mm-hmm. But, you know, what does this pandemic mean for us to do in a different way? You know, clearly at summer and now, you know, stretching into the fall here, the racial injustice issues that are continuing to be a challenge across the country, you know, it's really important. We're just releasing today a big study that, you know, most white Christians haven't changed their mind much over the summer about race, about racial injustice. Hmm. In fact, there's a bigger percentage of practicing Christians who are say they're unmotivated to try to pursue racial justice than there were last summer. Hmm. And that really breaks my heart, you know, the idea that we as a Christian community have seen this sort of the challenges and the heart cry of people of color in the black community. I understand the issues are complicated. I understand the language is hard. I understand there's lots of things that are sort of for and against the perspective of what is a biblical approach to reconciliation. But the fact that Christians have actually taken some steps backwards is a flashing light, both for the purpose of racial reconciliation, but also for ministry to the next generation. I mean, we see in our research that young people are eager for this conversation. They're eager to see the church step up into things that matter most. So it's important that we help to show them the biblical way forward on these kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. So that's a flashing light. And is there hope there somewhere for you?
Well, it's a hard one. I think the issues are complicated, and I don't want to project a false sense of hope about it.
Uh-huh.
I think I was expecting more change in the summer, you know, to see more people actually, you know, aware of and concerned about race and race relations and racial justice, racial injustice. But most of the metrics seem to move in the opposite direction, which I think just shows how deep the problems go. Mm-hmm. You know, that if you awaken the wrong side of the beast about this, that the problems become worse.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't have simple solutions about that. But I do see there a lot of churches more than ever were talking about race and racial justice this summer. A lot of pastors were willing and interested in helping to move the church forward. I feel like there was a lot of positive motion there, that people began to realize that the country has a history of racial injustice that that still may, you know, characterize life today. So there was a wide range of things that I think are are good signs for positive movement in the future, but a change will be slow, and we shouldn't be satisfied with that.
Well, on that sobering note, let me thank you for spending some time with us here on Inside Out. Thank you, David Kinnaman, for being with me here today.
Of course, yeah, my pleasure.
My guest has been Dr. David Kinnaman, president of the Barna Group. You'll find links to the Barna State of the Church 2020 findings right where you find Inside Out podcasts at fln.org/insideout. I'm Martha Manikas-Foster with Inside Out on Family Life.